So here we are, moving into a future where more of what we see and feel and experience might happen in a way we can barely comprehend. And the thing is, it's not that far off. And if a part of you feels like we've all unwittingly opted into a kind of crazy mass human experiment with an uncertain outcome, you're not alone.
There are a lot of things sort of happening at all kinds of subconscious and subterranean levels that we are really not equipped to be aware of, but we are in it. It's very hard to see and observe and know when you're part of the experiment and there is no control group.
This is Abba Devaser. She's a novelist who has thought a lot about this, about how our screen selves are transforming our real selves, even the way we perceive space and time. Here's Abba on the TED stage.
So many of us today have the sensation that time's arrow is pointing everywhere and nowhere at once. This is because time doesn't flow in the digital world in the same way that it does in the natural one. We all know that the internet has shrunk space as well as time. Far away over there is now here. News from India is a stream on my smartphone app, whether I'm in New York or New Delhi. Your last job, your dinner reservations from last year, your former friends lie on a flat plane with today's friends because the internet also archives and it warps the past. With no distinction left between the past, the present, and the future, and the here or there, we are left with this moment everywhere. This moment that I'll call the digital now. This digital now is not the present because it's always a few seconds ahead with Twitter streams that are already trending and news from other time zones. This now bears very little physical or psychological reference to our own state. Its focus instead is to distract us at every turn on the road. Are you reading an interview by an author? Why not buy his book? Tweet it, share it, like it, find other books exactly like his, find other people reading those books. Not just is the digital now far from the present, but it's in direct competition with it. And therein lies its greatest convenience and horror. I can order foreign language books in the middle of the night, shop for Parisian macarons, and leave video messages that get picked up later. At all times, I can operate at a different rhythm and pace from you, while I sustain the illusion that I'm tapped into you in real time. Just how can we prioritize in the landscape of the digital now?
So another idea that you talk about is this idea that, you know, the overall time we have for our narrative, our lifespan, is increasing.
Yeah.
But the moments that we have are smaller.
I think this is really related to the computers and the speed at which they operate. We're living at their speed now. Our own innate rhythm of time and the rhythm of that thing are not in sync. It also explains why we can spend a long time on it. And the next thing is you look up and 2 hours have passed. So it's using some very real parts of your body and your brain to hold you there. It uses all of the things that evolution has prepared us. You know, like something is blinking, pay attention. There's movement in the corner of your eye. Pay attention to it because it's going to matter. All of those ancient reflexes in us are hijacked by the computer through its, you know, it's a very rich medium, and you stay with it.
Time warping technology challenges our deepest core. You and I know exactly what it means like to be truly present in a moment. It might have happened while we're playing an instrument or looking into the eyes of someone we've known for a very long time. At such moments, ourselves are complete. The self that lives in the long narrative arc and the self that experiences the moment become one. I first experienced these feelings with my grandmother. I wanted to learn to cook, and she kept me in the kitchen, cutting, cubing, and chopping for a whole month. My grandmother taught me that things happen in the time they take, that time can't be fought. And because it will pass and it will move, we owe the present moment our full attention. One of my yoga instructors once said that love is attention. And definitely for my grandmother, love and attention were one and the same thing. The digital world cannibalizes time, and in doing so, what it threatens is the completeness of ourselves. It threatens the flow of love. But we don't need to let it. We can choose otherwise. And in our lives and in our actions, we can choose those solutions and those innovations and those moments that restore the flow of time instead of fragmenting it. We can slow down and we can tune into the ebb and flow of time. We can choose to take time back. Thank you.
How do we do it? Like, how do we reconnect to our human reality?
I think it's for each one of us to ask what's important and whether we want this or not. So for me, the physicality of things, which is what is missing in the digital world, is really what sort of gives me something to hold on to.
Yeah.
And if we think about our own memories, there's the digital world where we are spending a lot of time. But if I think of the highlights of, say, my year last year, the things I remember are hiking, you know, the north rim of the Grand Canyon, not the hundreds of hours spent on the internet. And part of who we are and our sense of self is about the memories we carry, the experiences we've had that have shaped us. And so the biggest story that we have of our own life that we carry in our head, is that going to get emptier as a result of this? Or what will fill it if real life is not going to fill it?
Do you think that we can do this as a species, as we are moving towards a digital future and reality, that we can actually pull it back and say, wait a minute, we need to reconnect with our physical reality?
Yes, absolutely.
We can do that?
Absolutely. I think we can. I think deep down all of us have a desire and a yearning for things outside of us. Just, you know, going to the beach on a Sunday, you see a lot of people out there trying to listen to the sound of the waves. And even if they may have their cell phones with them, they're at least somewhat present. Something brought them there. You know, we want to feel the sand. We want to feel simple things. We want to be able to look up at the moon. We definitely have a larger reality which is outside of us that is calling us all the time. You know, we are, at the end of the day, biological creatures.
Abba Devaser is a novelist and an artist. She lives in New York. You can hear her entire talk at TED.com. By the way, last week we asked for audio messages of your screen stories about a time when your digital life bumped up against your real one. Here's some of what you said.
I got a text, pick up my phone, and started texting back without ever waking up.
One of the ladies in admin like cornered me while I'm working in the office, and she's like, hey, I saw that blog post that you wrote about us. I was like, what?
Spent a weekend with a girl translating our conversation through my phone.
I Snapchatted myself en route to dinner, and it was obvious that I lied to my other friend.
It is ridiculous how much I hate this persona of this person online.
And I said, sir, when the machines rise up, you will be the first one to walk willingly into their claws because the computer told you to go left, and so you did.
I was totally embarrassed. I couldn't believe that I sent her this text. This is so unlike me to do this. And now I am about to marry her next year.
The same is true for friends at work. I've got a good friend, and she met her husband, Ani Harmony, and it occurred to me that playground after playground must be populated by e-babies. The internet seems to literally be making us.
When the sun burns out, we'll light the world with tiny glowing screens. Tiny glowing screens, glowing screens. When the sun burns out, we'll light the world with tiny glowing screens. Tiny glowing screens.
You can hear more of these stories at our website. Go to ted.npr.org. Hey, thanks for listening to our show this week, Screen Time Part 2. Our production staff at NPR includes Jeff Rogers, Brent Bachman, Megan Kane, Neva Grant, and Sanaz Meshkinpour, with help from Daniel Shukin and Sharif Youssef. Our partners at TED are Chris Anderson, June Cohen, Darren Triff, and Janet Lee. We love to hear from you. If you have any feedback, send us an email at tedradiohour@npr.org. You can follow us on Twitter. That's at TED Radio Hour. I'm Guy Raz, and you've been listening to Ideas Worth Spreading right here on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Tiny glowing screens.